we're going to get Josh Ward to join us and break some of this down. Caleb just came on Twitter and said, what about a NIT-style playoff for football? We've got chaos going everywhere.
I love it.
Josh Ward from WNML joining us. Josh, the conversation this morning has been about Nick Saban's comments about changing in scheduling and what that could mean to non-Power 5 schools. So do you buy into some element of what he's saying, that Power 5 teams should only be allowed to play other Power 5 conferences?
Well, I mean, I like the idea in terms of entertainment. I mean, you can look through the first few weeks of the season and from a fan standpoint, find reason for that because – I mean, there are just a lot of games, even throughout the season. You can get into November with scheduling, and I think SEC coaches, the smart ones, have looked at non-Power 5 opponents and figured out how to work those into the schedule to help them get ready for a big game that will follow. But also, you can look at it the other side and say, well, that those games help those schools and those conferences and those athletic departments, which is a big part of it, whether we're talking about non-Power 5 or FCS games, and I don't think that should be ruled out of the conversation. But every fall, we enter certain weeks, especially in the SEC, and there is a big chunk of games that are just snoozers. And you also have to look at, when you look at the fan standpoint, season ticket purchases. I mean, go look at Georgia's home schedule this year and look at the games that will be coming in to Athens for Georgia fans to see play. It's pretty unappealing. So that's something that has to be considered. There's the fan side. There's also the college athletic side. There's also the business side. So you're trying to put all of these different angles into one big circle, and it becomes a jumbled mess.
I mean, I feel like there's enough money, Josh, that we can have all of it. Like, we can play only Power 5 teams and then also figure out a way to fund the lower-tier schools. UT Chattanooga, it costs $800,000 or whatever in a football game, paycheck game, to fund their athletic department. I mean, these schools are getting $4 billion just in television revenue from the playoff alone. I feel like they could figure out ways to earmark that money.
Yeah, I think you're totally correct that they could and they maybe should. But we also need the people in the most important positions that also have personal financial interest to help make those moves. And is that going to happen? Because a lot of the money still goes to things whether we're talking about coaching salaries, or look at a story that comes out of Texas with $10,000 lockers. I mean, so, yeah, the money is there, but we would also have to adjust how that money is being spent, and that comes back to probably the most important position, most important people in those power positions. That's been a part of the bowl conversation, I think, over the last 10, 15 years since the start of the BCS, for sure. That's gotten more attention. And I would say that's the case here. People who have financial investments for themselves will still think about themselves with these decisions.
At that point, Josh, we're talking to Josh Ward from WNML in this conversation. Is there some point where the Power 5 should just separate and do their own thing separate from everybody? I mean, because ultimately, what's the big appeal to watching BYU-Houston if it's not even a game that really counts towards anything in the grand scheme of things?
Yeah, the appeal would just be football is on, so right. We'll sit down and watch. But you're right. But doesn't it also seem kind of funny, or like if somebody comes in, doesn't know anything about college football and how everything is designed, and they looked at the setup, doesn't it seem odd that the SEC and the Sun Belt fall under the same rules and guidelines when they are two totally separate leagues? I mean, it almost is the highest level of professional football, and then a minor league, if you want to compare the two. And I just chose two conferences there, but Power 5, non-Power 5. If somebody from the outside who's never watched college football, we see it every day, so it makes more sense to us. But if you really try to break it down, the fact that they all are under the same rule structure when they operate in two completely separate worlds doesn't really make a lot of sense.
Josh Ward joining us here. Camp opening up this weekend for the Vols, and listen, I think we all know that the downside for this team is 6-6, and Butch Jones could get fired. The upside for this team, maybe it's 10-2, Florida and Bama being the losses. Maybe that's the upside. If you're going to assume that this team reaches upside, who are the players? Give me two or three names outside of the quarterback position that are going to step in and become star players and develop into sort of key contributor roles.
Yeah, star players and guys that emerge. I mean, there are a lot of those. And I would start with quarterback, but you're right. That's obvious. That 2015 class, and Quentin Dormady is a part of that, by the way, but that 2015 class, I'm sure I've brought it up in the past, but Khalil McKenzie was a five-star defensive tackle. I think he needs to be an all-SEC level player if Tennessee is going to become a 10-win level team. And maybe this is a cop-out, but at least one of those defensive ends. If they have one of those guys emerge as an elite player because you're replacing Derek Barnett, then you can probably have a solid Harold Taylor, Kyle Phillips, both a part of that 15 class, and then Jonathan Kongbo, who everybody at Tennessee wants to say, hey, this guy is a different player. We hear so much about how he's on a mission, according to Bob Shoup, and how he had a great offseason and spring. So maybe he can be the guy. Can he become a guy that teams have to focus on every week? And then on the offensive side, you know, John Kelly is obvious because he's a starting running back and he's coming back and he showed that he can be a good player. Is there a number two guy, though? Is Ty Chandler ready to be a go-to player in the backfield that can touch the ball 10, 12 times in a game, can carry the ball and be an option out of the backfield? They need skill help. A guy I like, now I'm kind of just running through the roster, but Tyler Byrd, who played last year as a true freshman, South Florida kid, is an elite athlete, I think could be one day an all-SEC player at corner or wide receiver. They're keeping him at wide receiver. So for Tennessee's offense, I would make him a focus. Juwan Jennings is your number one wide receiver. You need help around him. I would go to Tyler Byrd and try to find as many ways to get him the football as possible because I think he is a game-breaking option in the offense.
So, Josh, I didn't feel like last year talent was always the issue. It was application of that talent that felt like the issue. Was there anything you saw behind the scenes at practice or around the team that you can see going into camp this weekend that can tell you if that's no longer an issue?
Well, let's see what they look like up front. You know, I didn't mention any linemen with Braden's question there, but that unit as a whole, that would maybe go more in line with this one. You have Jayshon Robertson, who's a preseason All-SEC guy, but as a group, you know, Trey Smith comes in as a true freshman. He's one of the most talented players on the team, and I think he's a starter. I think he's probably a starter at one of the guard positions, but does that offensive line come together as a group? Because look back to last August, and I don't know that they were there physically, and you know, a guy like Drew Richmond at left tackle wasn't really ready to be Tennessee's starting left tackle. So you had all these different offensive line groups, and I think that you know, the offensive line, as it changed throughout the season, kind of represented how Tennessee's season itself went. So you know, let's see who the leaders are. Last year they had these permanent captains, and that was the first time Butch Jones had done it, and it didn't really work out. Three of them got hurt. I mean, there was one week where you know, the captains lead practice, so they line up, and there was only one of them. You have Josh Dobbs out there sitting by himself, and it just looked kind of funny. So do they have the leadership? Do they have an identity with what they want to do on offense? I think that should be running the football and work and let your quarterback work in there. But there's a lot to be determined. They report on Friday, and Butch Jones meets with the media, and then they get going on Saturday. And I think they have a lot to figure out. But looking back, I don't think we recognized correctly in August before the 2016 season some of the issues that they would have to deal with. I mean, pretty quickly we started talking about, hey, what's going on with Alvin Kamara? Why isn't he touching the football? That's why I say, hey, Tyler Byrd, figure out a plan for him. Figure out how to get another running back in there with John Kelly. They need to figure that out very quickly with a new quarterback taking over as well.
He's Josh Ward, WNML. I can't talk this morning, Josh. Follow him on Twitter, @Josh_Ward. Man, we always appreciate your time.
Yeah, thank you guys.